From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of March, 2011. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group. That's in Decatur, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, Madhu Khanna will be here from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. She's an ag economist and has looked at indirect land use as it's related to biofuels. Tomorrow afternoon on the FarmDoc website, you'll find a brand new article penned by her. We'll get a preview today right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. And as we finish out our half hour, we'll talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day higher than nearby May wheat at $7.10 and a quarter, up 48 and a quarter today. July at 7.45 and a quarter, up 49 and a quarter cents. Hard red in Kansas City finished the July 53 cents higher at $8.41 and three quarters. From the corn pit back in Chicago, nearby May futures at 6.46 and a half, a settlement price up the 30-cent limit. July up 30 as well, 6.53 and three quarters the settlement. September corn at 6.13, up 30, and December futures up the limit, 30 higher at $5.79 and a quarter. March futures of next year in the corn pit at 5.87 and a half, up 30 cents. May soybean futures at $13.35 and a quarter, up 48 and a quarter today. July at $13.43 and a half, 48 and a quarter higher. August beans at $13.39 and three quarters, up 49 cents. September $13.21, up 50. And November beans at $13.02 and a quarter, up 51 and a half cents on the afternoon. Bean meal futures finished the May at $3.58.60, up $14.10. And the May bean oil at $54.52. up $1.56. Live cattle futures in the April contract were up $1.37 and a half on this Thursday afternoon. 100 pounds at $111.87 and a half, and the March feeder cattle finished at $127.95. They were up $1.45. The April futures there at $129.45 were $1.75 higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby gold futures at $1,405 an ounce were up $8.90 on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 88 points higher at 11,729. And the crude oil futures finished the April contract at $101.50 a barrel, up $3.52. Heating oil or diesel fuel up 6 7/10 at $3.64 a cent. The RBOB gasoline at $2.95 even, that's up $0.10 on the day. And natural gas on the afternoon at $4.15 and 8 cents a cent, up 22 cents. Ethanol futures were down 7 cents in the nearby March contract at 2.58 and 3 tenths, but the April futures gained a dime on the afternoon and 6 tenths to finish at 2.40 and 3 tenths for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service on this Thursday afternoon. They say skies will be partly sunny, a high near 69 degrees. It'll be breezy, a south-southwest wind at about 23 miles an hour. It'll gust as high as 34. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low around 50 degrees, southwest winds at 9 to 16. They'll come out of the northwest. Winds could gust as high as 21 this evening. Friday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, a high near 62. Northeast winds between 6 and 9. And Friday night, mostly cloudy skies, a low of 36. Northeast winds at 11 miles an hour. They'll gust as high as 15 miles an hour. Saturday should be mostly sunny, a high near 55. Northeast winds between 9 and 11. They'll gust as high as 15. And Saturday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a low of 41 degrees. Sunday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a high near 53. Sunday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, the low on Sunday evening of this week, just 49 degrees. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us today to take a look at the agricultural futures markets is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Dan, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you see in the marketplace at this point? Oh, Dan's not quite on the line yet, but you know what? Dan is probably out and about. He told me to give him the call on the cell phone, so I'll tell you what we've been up to all week because Dave Dickey and I have been out of the office. As you probably made note, I'm on a phone line at this point, and I've been working out of my home. I had outpatient surgery on Monday, and well, Dave has been out of the office, so he and I have both been trying to get everything done. We thank you for your patience, especially those of you who listen online. We didn't get everything updated quite on time earlier in the week, but we're getting better at that as we go. At this point, Dan Zwicker is on the phone line. Thanks, Dan, for joining us this afternoon. Where are you today?
I made it back to my office earlier this morning, though. I was over in Paris, Illinois, visiting with farmers of the Farm Bureau. I've been doing that Outlook meeting for probably 25 years, so I always go over to Paris about this time of year. We actually got it delayed. We're supposed to have been there the first of the month in February, but that was during the snowstorm, so this was kind of a catch-up meeting.
It was a catch-up meeting. You can hear my little dog in the background. I'm here at home in the lazy boy because I'm trying to catch up on some good rest as I recover from surgery on Monday. But, boy, what a week to watch the marketplace just here at home. It has been up and down, and today was a big up day. Why did it turn around?
Well, I think everybody reminds me of back in June when I told them that it was time to giddy up. I guess we need to maybe change the slogan to Hi-O Silver because this market is quite volatile. It does definitely have a lot of people confused, but I think I would sum it up as a rule, and of course everything's a little different, but when you have major events, maybe such as this nuclear problem we're seeing in Japan, whether it was Chernobyl back in the mid-80s, whether it's a weather issue, a lot of times you have two waves of panic. And that usually then completes that move, whether it's a panic move to the upside or a panic move to the downside. And this, the Japanese thing basically started. You had the first wave late Thursday night or early Friday morning. It pretty much was through the day Friday. Monday we kind of climaxed that. They were stable. And then Tuesday we had the second wave. And basically from that point forward, other than the old crop corn spread where you had a lot of funds unwinding their long old crop, short new crop, the market was basically bottoming. And then once today started, or last night traded, once that spread unwinding had pretty well completed itself, the market was able to go higher. All the news seemed to turn kind of friendly, or at least the Japanese situation didn't turn any more negative. And you basically see the dollar now. It is breaking a major uptrend line drawn off of the 08 lows and the late 10 lows. Let me look here. Yeah, it was actually we had the 07, 08 lows, and then that was connected here by the late 09 low, and then we had a late 10 low, November 10 low, and we're busting through that, and most trend lines are always broken. It's whether about you touch them enough, they basically break through. So the dollar now has clearly broke underneath that trend line. The next site here is probably take out that November low about 75.63, and I think weak dollar is going to be bullish commodities. And I mean, there's everything that I look around. I look at the Japan situation and around the world. I don't see any reason not to be bullish commodities. It's just going to be kind of a volatile situation in here, Todd.
if the dollar weakens enough, it does become a problem. I take it you don't see that happening at this point.
I think the dollar, some of my cyclical work would imply that the dollar now is in descent into a June low. Fundamentally, a couple things that could drive it lower, of course, is Japanese basically are going to be selling U.S. bonds, buying yen, are going to convert their currency from U.S. dollars into Japanese yen. That's one of the pressure points here, weakening the dollar. The other thing you see, the Eurozone is going to be raising interest rates, so there's going to be more interest in selling dollars and buying euros to get a higher interest rate return. So I see a lot of fundamental reasons, and basically, you know, you see what's going on in Washington. I mean, they try to cut $30 billion out of a $3.7 trillion budget. That tells you, I mean, that gets lost in the accounting error, really. That's just junk change. So, you know, and the Fed has basically said they're going to continue their quantitative easing. So I think that all kind of points toward dollar weakness, devaluation of currency, U.S. currency, and that means higher commodity prices.
Well, so we have a good view for corn. The soy complex is a little different because we, of course, have the South American harvest coming in and being ready to ship out for export at this point. Are you as positive to it as you are to the corn market?
Well, I think you have to in the sense, I don't know what USA is going to come up with here at the end of the month for stocks and what they're going to come up for acres, but world demand for soybeans is going to continue to grow. China demand is going to grow. And, you know, actually their crop now is starting to go backwards. Their corn crop is going backwards because they're not going to get their double crop planted. So actually the South American production numbers are kind of going backwards now after the market worked in larger numbers. So I'm not terribly bearish beans either. I mean, actually, I think depending upon what the acres is and what the growing season is, I mean, the balance sheets look to stay fairly tight to me, and we're going to have to raise some pretty good crops of both corn and soybeans if you're going to want to so-called tank the market from these levels. So I think the balance sheet on beans are going to stay relatively tight. I think the World Board with their big planted acreage estimates that it came out with during the Outlook conference. I think they've set up the statistical ag services to the point that, you know, what I think it's going to be hard for NAS to find the acres that the World Board has kind of teed them up for. So we'll have to kind of see how that plays out. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that March report shows less acres of everything of what people were thinking, not less acres from a year ago, but smaller acres than what the market would like to believe or what USDA World Board has kind of teed up the market for anyway.
And just maybe 20 seconds, do you have an inkling about the quarterly grain stocks report and what it might show on that same date?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that you can buy cash corn any place. There is plenty of cash corn around, and that has kind of led a belief in the trade that maybe that the quarterly grain stocks report might show more corn around than maybe what the market was working, but that's anybody's guess. USDA has had a hard time getting their arms around these production levels the last couple of years. And so I think there's kind of a discomfort level of all traders going into a stocks report because stocks reports can be game changers. So I think, you know, you have to be cautious, but you know, the trend has been every time USDA has had a major supply survey report,
gotta go, Dan.
Numbers have gone down.
Thanks so much, Dan Swicker with ADM
Support
Grain Group.
Comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. This is a Farm Doc podcast. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Madhu Khanna is with us, an ag economist from the U of I. Just penned a policy brief measuring indirect land use change with biofuels, the implications for policy. That's the title of the brief. Madhu, thank you so much for joining us. Can you give us a quick introduction to what the brief looked at?
Well, the brief looked at the problem of indirect land use change that occurs when the U.S. Produces increasing amounts of corn ethanol and diverts corn from food and feed markets to biofuel production. That reduces our exports to the world market, raises price of corn in the world market, and causes other countries to convert some of their native lands, land under vegetation and forests, to cropland production. That process releases a lot of stored carbon, which has been stored in the forest and the vegetation. And the concern is that the release of that carbon may more than offset the savings in greenhouse gas emissions that we produce in the U.S. by switching away from fossil fuels to biofuels. And so that's caused a lot of skepticism about the potential for biofuel production in the U.S. to actually make a difference to the global greenhouse gas emissions.
In summary, is it possible to really measure the indirect land use as a biofuel is brought into production?
Well, it's not something that can actually be measured through direct observation, because it is very difficult to isolate the effects of biofuels by themselves, from all the other changes that take place over time in a particular region. And so the only way to estimate what the indirect land use change related greenhouse gas emissions is through economic and biophysical models. Those models allow us to analyze a scenario with and without biofuels, and then figure out the consequences of biofuel production in one part of the world on emissions and land use changes in the rest of the world.
And to be clear, your paper did not suggest a model, but that was really the only way to go about measuring land use. Is that correct?
That's right. The paper is not about developing a model to estimate it. It actually reviews there are numerous studies that have tried to estimate the magnitude of the change due to biofuel production. And we were looking at reviewing that literature and trying to understand why there is so much variation in the estimates of indirect land use change across the different studies. And we find that it's highly dependent on the assumptions that are being made by these models. Many of these assumptions are based on very limited empirical research in trying to define parameters that describe economic and individual behavior as we make land use choices. And so we were looking at the effects of that on the estimates that are obtained by these models.
What are some of the types of variables that come into play? I suppose whether land is available, how easy it is to convert to cropland in other parts of the world. What do some of the models look at, and what are the pitfalls that you see?
Well, you're right. I think, those are some of the key factors. Assumptions about how much land is available for conversion to cropland, what the productivity of that land is as we move from the average cropland currently in production to more marginal lands, how much will the cropland productivity decline, as well as looking at the length of the time horizon over which we will be assessing the impact of biofuel production. That's another really critical variable for which there's really no scientific basis for making a decision, whether we are looking at taking a 20-year time horizon or a 30-year time horizon can make a significant difference to the indirect greenhouse gas emissions intensity of biofuels. Another critical factor is what is assumed about the rate of growth in crop productivity over time. And many of these models assume either no or very little rate of growth of productivity. And if you allow for a 1 or 2% rate of growth of corn yields, that can significantly reduce the magnitude of the indirect land use change effect.
Do you have a possible solution to this indirect land use problem and how it's calculated at this point and what might be a better approach?
So the solution, one of the solutions to the issue of indirect land use change is to promote biofuels that are known to have smaller indirect land use change effects. And energy crops that are, for example, switchgrass, miscanthus, are potential feedstocks for producing the next generation of biofuels that have the potential to not only be grown on land which is not currently under crop production, but they're also very high yielding, so we could use our land much more efficiently and therefore need to displace fewer crops from existing land, and as a result would have smaller negative impacts on world prices and therefore on cropland, you know, that is brought into production in other regions. So one approach would be to shift towards the use of biomass as a feedstock and away from food-based crops for biofuel production. The other approaches that could mitigate the indirect land use change effect would be through policy changes. And essentially, this is we're trying to deal with a global problem of greenhouse gas emissions, and the solution to that needs to be a global policy which puts a price on carbon and therefore creates a disincentive for conversion of land from forests and grasslands into cropland. In the absence of such a policy, or while we're trying to reach an international agreement to do that, we should be designing ways to encourage sustainable land use, both in the U.S. as well as in other countries particularly susceptible to indirect land use change, and rewarding landowners for providing services, you know, environmental services such as storing carbon or providing other environmental services as a way to create incentives for them to use the land sustainably and therefore reduce these indirect effects that we might observe otherwise.
Madhu Khanna is an ag economist at the University of Illinois. You can read her policy brief, Measuring Indirect Land Use Change with Biofuels, Implications for Policy, at the FarmDoc website. That's www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In just 2 minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Pete Levitt about the weather forecast.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Green Beer Day. The holiday is thought to have begun in the early 1940s on the campus of Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, during a time when the U.S. was experiencing grain shortages during World War II. Bars and restaurants in Oxford today opened as early as 4:30 a.m. to serve green eggs and ham and green bagels to hungry students. It's also St. Patrick's Day in honor of Ireland's patron saint. Celebration of St. Patrick began in 1737 among Irish immigrants to the U.S., where the first St. Patrick's Day Parade was held in Boston, organized by the Charitable Irish Society. It's also St. Gertrude Day. She is known as the patron of gardeners. On this day in agricultural history in 1751, Anders Dahl was born, a renowned Swedish botanist. The Dahlia flower was named for him. In 1834, Gottlieb Wilhelm Daimler was born. He invented the first high-speed combustion engine in 1883. 2 years later, he added a carburetor and built what some say was the world's first motorbike. He followed that up in 1886 with the construction of a four-wheeled automobile capable of a speed of 11 miles per hour. And in 1845, Englishman Steve Perry received a patent for the rubber band. It was made from vulcanized rubber, but the idea originated with Thomas Hancock, who around 1820 sliced up a bottle made out of the tree milk of the Southern American rubber tree. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us is Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist. Take a look at the weather forecast. Pete, it's the third Thursday of the month, and that means that we have some reports to take a look at to begin with.
All right, Todd. Good afternoon. We're looking at the forecast for April now, produced by the National Weather Service. And the forecast for the month of April is one for continued cool weather from the Pacific Northwest eastward across the northern tier of states right into the Midwest. And then it sort of tapers off until near normal conditions as you get a little further east. For precipitation in April, they have precipitation below normal from the Pacific Northwest right on through the, above normal from the Pacific Northwest right on through the Midwest and into the Appalachians. So you have a cool and wet pattern forecast for the northern tier of states and especially in the Midwestern areas. They have above normal temperatures forecast for the Southwest and dry weather for the Southwestern U.S. and also in the Southeastern portion of the country. Now what this all means is that we're looking at extended drier than normal conditions for the Western Plains and the Southwest Plains and the hard winter wheat belt. So we expect that the crop there will continue to suffer from moisture stress as well as poor emergence during the season. That hard winter wheat belt has been under stress all season, and I don't think that's going to be relieved, and the forecast looks quite credible to me. For the northern tier of states and the Midwest, well, nobody usually objects to abundant precipitation. However, we've had maybe a little excess of that in the eastern Corn Belt, and that may make it a little bit hard to get field work going and up and running as we move into the spring months, April and into May. The below normal temperatures are sort of a mixed blessing for the upper Midwest because it may slow the rate of snow melt. They've had a very heavy snow cover up there. We're all anticipating flooding conditions in the upper Midwest. And this, of course, is something that has not been unusual in the last several years. And I think we may see some more problems from that.
In the southern third of Illinois and from there on southward, many will be looking in the next few weeks to put corn in the ground as quickly as they can. Do you think that can happen under good growing conditions?
Yeah, I think that's a better possibility there, Todd, because the wetness sort of ends at the confluence of the Mississippi and Ohio River Valley, south of there down through the Delta region. It looks like things will be drier as you go farther south and maybe even a little bit too dry in the southeast. Temperatures in that part of the country are expected to be pretty much near to near normal for the most part. So on that basis, I think we will get some planting progress and probably some pretty good progress in the South, and that'll be a plus.
Thanks so much, Pete, for joining us today.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Agricultural meteorologist Pete Leavitt joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon. You have a good day. I'm Todd Gleason.